given the nature of the situation that we're in, it seems appropriate to intensify the pace of the teachings, preparing for the scenario that the ego would think is worst case and the soul will recognize as best case, but to increase the not only the intensity of the energy field, but the directness of the information necessary to make use of that energy. So the last teaching was focused on the samsaric dimension, and I was wearing a different hat. I'm now back in my spiritually oriented cap that is nirvanically centered rather than samsarically. And so I don't feel there's much need, if any, to refer any more to what's going on in the realm of samsara, because it's an illusion. And for yogis, our goal now must be to get out of that illusion. There are reports coming in every day that the hunch that was expressed has ever more evidence backing it up, including things like activation of air defenses around Southern California, L.A. and San Diego particularly, but other places. Reports of various kinds of military activity on all sides of this this game, and more activity of evacuations of civilians from military bases, and people suddenly going on vacation, and some seeming to go to bunkers in various places that they've been assigned. So those kinds of things are in the news. You can take them for whatever you consider them to be worth, but the reports are peppering the field, and some from relatively credible sources, judging from their history, their record. But as I say, the goal of a yogi should be to use whatever time is left in this yuga, which may be very, very little, and meaning also personally the amount of time each of us has to be alive in the present body that you might think that you are in, and therefore whatever you want to get out of life and accomplish in terms of your eternal destiny, not simply, hopefully, not focused on what does your ego want, but what do you really want in your relationship to God, if you have one, and if not, do you want to create one while there's that opportunity, and use this time to get as close to that source of life, of being, of good karma, of the power of creative imagination to dream and to inhabit the highest levels of God's mind and the powers of that mind, and know what it is to be, to have that mind, and to be the one who is eternal and present as the creative, sustaining and destroying force, without having any separation and without having any fear, and to know what it is to be the blissful self. So whatever traces of karma remain that keep one bound to the ego or to a to some level of the delusion rather than to the real, this is the time to work through those obstacles with all due diligence. So I was given today a set of teachings that, actually three sets of teachings, to as much as possible compress the instructions that we need to have and compose them in as coherent a way, and to do it for those at different levels of readiness for self-realization. So I don't know if I'll be able to get to all of the notes I was given to transmit, but in general, we have three sets of Pontifex points to ponder. Now, you all know Pontifex, which is shortened by the Catholics to Pontiff, actually comes from the early French. You know, pont is a bridge, right? Sur le pont d'Avignon, everyone knows that one. So the pont is the bridge. The fex is the building of a bridge. So these are the instructions of how to build a bridge to bring your consciousness from samsara to nirvana. And then you can wear a pontiff's hat when you do that. So set one is for the top class students. It's not for everyone. It's for those whose hair is on fire, or your heart is on fire, even I think more importantly, for union with the Supreme Self, and so this set is for those who are ready to take the instructions straight in the purest form that they can be, that I can relay them at least. So set one These are the seven resolutions of the buddhi. You know, the buddhi is the part of the soul that discerns, and it can be at either high resolution or low resolution. And so this is the points that will hopefully help you shift the resolution. Okay. So, for the ego, because I'm assuming that some of us are still in the ego, and that's why the bridge is required. For the ego, whose consciousness is in a delusional state, that delusion has caused reality to seem to come in two polarized states of mind, the samsaric state of mind and the nirvanic state of mind. Okay? So samsara and nirvana are not places. They're not realms. They're simply states of mind. Okay? They're entirely internal. And as you shift your state of mind from one locus to the other, voila, you are in nirvana rather than samsara. So it's nothing that has any external activity involved. Okay? It's simply a focus on that level of your consciousness that is completely accessible, but that the ego has separated it from its own nirvanic dimension and is determined to stay in the samsaric state of mind. It's determined, you see. This is the obstacle. In fact, I would go so far as to say the ego forbids you to leave samsara for nirvana. It's forbidden. Because once you leave samsara for nirvana, there's no ego. So, we could say that for the ego, these will also appear as an egoic type of consciousness and a non-egoic form of consciousness. Okay? If you're in an ego, if there's an I thought, if you believe you're a separate individual acting in a world of bodies and of multiplicity, then you're in the samsaric state of mind. And if you're in a non-egoic state, that will not be the case. There will not be a sense of difference, a sense of subject-object duality. So that is how the polarization tends to express itself. And it also expresses itself in terms of the difference between life and death. Okay? The ego wants to stay alive. It believes it is alive and that nirvana is death. And it's trying to prevent its death. It doesn't want to encourage it, right? It's doing whatever it can to stay alive, to survive, even though there's a death drive. That let's leave that part out of it. But nonetheless, there's a desire on the ego to stay alive. And the ego conceives of nirvana as death, and death meaning a lack of consciousness. This is a delusion. It's not the case. But all of this creates the resistance. And one has to become aware of that polarization and ponder the possibility that, in fact, it is a delusion. You see, the definition of a delusion is something you think is reality, right? The one who is deluded cannot know that they're deluded, or the delusion comes to an end. And so even though you may have moments of clarity where you get it, the ego will cause you to forget it and to go back into the belief that, no, this is real. That's the delusion. Believing in God is the delusion. Believing in nirvana is the delusion. No, there's no way out. This is it. And so as long as one has that belief and you believe this is reality, you won't make contact with what is actually reality. So this is the great trick that has to be overcome. This is the mahya of maya. And if we can't see through the magic trick, then we will be fooled by it. Okay, so you move to the nirvanic state of mind, from nirvana you will perceive clearly that there is no samsara and that there is no nirvana. That nirvana itself was a samsaric delusion. But you have to be in nirvana to recognize that. So it is another state, a non-egoic state. But because that non-egoic state is beyond description, beyond boundary, beyond place, beyond an ability to know it as something that is an object or has any degree of otherness, it does not exist, because what exists is only that which is objectifiable, and nirvana is not. Right? It's too subtle to be able to be perceived, because it is not. It's nothing other than the most subtle possible level of consciousness that is free completely of egoic thoughts, and therefore of any ability for the ego to capture its reality. The ego is gone, you see. And it's the ego that labels and dreams existences. And the other aspect of it is, the reason why nirvana doesn't exist is that the nirvanic self does not keep files. Life for the ego, especially these days, is all about you have to keep files on everything and everyone. And the government is keeping files on you and everyone else. So it's all about files. And what are files? They're the past that you can later be blamed and blackmailed and captured, because it was clear that your tendency was... you've been radicalized or whatever, you know, all the different scenarios. But everyone is attached to their files, you see. And if to go in nirvana means you burn all your files, oh my God, that's terrible, you know. Then how will you know who's to blame and who did what and, you know, how to keep score, you see. All of that is gone. So you are defiled in another way. So as I mentioned before, it is forbidden to leave samsara. If you're in samsara and you're the ego, it's a command. You don't have the option. It's a command that outranks the ego, because it comes as a superego, but it's coming really from the censor, and you don't even have access to be able to argue with the one who is forbidding this. But that creates a very difficult obstacle to surmount. As long as you're under the jurisdiction of the ego's legal system, you do not have the right or the power to escape. Okay? This is a prison, literally. And until you pay your dues, you can't get out, but there is no way to pay those dues. And that's the trick, because every time you try to improve yourself, you're making more karma. You're simply ratifying the samsaric self, and you're actually putting another layer of bars on the prison window. So one has to come to terms with that fact. and with the implication. All effort is futile, but so is counter effort. So these are our two important points to keep in mind. You can't get out of samsara by trying to make effort to do so. However, the counter effort that your ego is making to stop you from leaving samsara is also futile. Because samsara doesn't really exist. So the ego is programmed to want to do something, right? Its question is always, how do I do it? How do I do it? Well, that I can't do anything. That I is the problem. It has to be eliminated. It can't do anything to get anywhere. It is delusional in its very nature. And it cannot leave doing for being. It's always in a state of becoming, which requires more effort, more doing. And all effort being futile, the ego's on a treadmill and getting nowhere, even if it tries to convince itself it's making progress. That progress will never lead to actual liberation. Okay, that's mostly the bad news of the situation. Now we can get to some of the good news of it. Adjective, I think I put another one in there. Ah, okay. I refer to it as emptiness. So, in effortless, immediate emptiness, the real is revealed. Okay? So these three are important. It's effortless. You have stopped all doing and have come to your being. It's immediate, it meaning both without a time lag, but also unmediated. There is no medium in which this appears. It doesn't happen to anyone. So it is, and that's why it is emptiness. It is an effortless, immediate state of emptiness of ego. And that state is also timeless. So there's an immediate shift from time to eternity, from samsara to nirvana. And it can happen at any moment, and it is unconditional. This is available to anyone just by stopping making all effort. But the paradox is there has to be such a yearning to make no effort that effort of reaching effortlessness burns up the karma of the ego. So there's a paradoxical relationship with effort and effortlessness. But the effort is an effort to purify the heart, to open the heart. But in that effort, a moment will come when you realize your heart has always been open. You haven't been in it, but it's always been open. And that is who you really are. And so the effort immediately becomes effortlessness. Ragged handwriting. Effortless emptiness has neither a past nor a future. That's what presence means, right? Emptiness is presence. And presence means exactly what it says. You are fully present, so fully present in the now that no trace of past or future remains. That's why there are no files, because they belong to the past. And therefore all attachments can no longer exist in the present. Attachments exist only in the past as memories and as a longing to return to that memory and bring it into a future, right? So the past and the future are two modes of yearning for not being present, for staying in samsara, because all samsara is a past and a future without a present. And past and future, neither of them exist. And so, of course, the ego is living in a fantasy. It's living in its mind that has memory traces of the past that it's still angry about and projecting onto what's happening now, creating a future that repeats the past, etc. So, but it's never present. It's always shifting from the past to another addition called the future, but of the same, having the same signature sanskaras and scenarios. And these patterns are what make the ego believe it actually exists through time, because it's perpetuating the past into the future. But it can never be present. And so it's always in a lack of being, because it's too busy becoming and trying to repeat what has been to be able to simply be. And some of the fear of the ego and letting go of past and future is a fear of disorientation. But I have to make plans. I have to, you know, make sure my investments are taken care of, and I have to make sure of this and that. And, you know, I need to calculate and strategize and all of that. So the mind has to jump from past to future. Well, no, it doesn't. And that's the seventh one. In effortless emptiness, let's say, in EE, in effortless emptiness, the self-arising wisdom that comes from that Supreme Self takes over, and life becomes spontaneous, and it's in accord with the Tao, inherently. It's in accord with the will of God, and everything works out optimally. But it works out optimally for the whole, because one is no longer identified with the part. And so it works out with a different optimal than the ego would have. It's the optimal of the whole intelligence of the real, not the ideas, beliefs, preconceptions, and wishes of the ego mind. And the more we have faith and trust in that self-arising wisdom, which replaces ego chatter, you will receive whatever downloads of information or of energy and spontaneous behavior that is necessary in any situation, but without leaving that state of total presence. This is the secret of great martial artists and athletes of all kinds, but it's the secret of anyone who attains a genius level performance in any arts or sciences or any field. That's it. It's a state of effortless presence in total relaxation and in total trust and faith and awareness that is able to slow down time, even stop it, or speed it up, or be able to recognize larger chunks of time as all being present until one can actually expand into the entirety of the explicate order being present as the implicate order, as a single thought, a single understanding. But that self-arising wisdom, to whatever level you have achieved constancy in the effortless emptiness, it is filled with wisdom and power and accuracy. So this is the secret of great archery. And you hit the bullseye of Brahman as soon as you are in that effortless emptiness. That's the first set. If you get that, you're liberated. And you are already liberated now because you can't do anything. It has to be effortless as a realization that you have actually never left nirvana. That was only a dream. And there was never even a nirvana to leave. So all the narratives of the ego disappear in total presence. And what replaces them is reality, the real, as it truly is, not as it is distorted and dreamed in a deluded form by an ego, which every ego does, because that's their function. They can only see a tiny splinter of reality. They cannot see the whole, and therefore cannot achieve fulfillment. But the moment you drop all of the ego's fantasies, everything that has to do with its past and its future, all of the traumas and their effects are gone. They never even existed. Because the present is what's real. The past was never real and never will be, nor the future. Only the presence of real awareness is reality itself. And that awareness is without traces of egoic delusion. Inherently, that's our natural state. So, those who are ready for it, I hope that it's useful as a kind of a compact set of parameters of the nature of the task that is no task to be recognized and realized. Let's see. Given that it's 6:30, let me stop there and open the floor and see what questions or concerns anyone has about these seven before I erase it and go on to the next set. If there is any. Okay, do you want the mic? Do we have...
intensities, but this is the highest intensity. Like, how does one know if one's yearning is the highest?
Okay, the word yearning is an interesting signifier. It's not desire, right? It's really based in love, right? And what causes it to be yearning instead of just simply adoration is that there isn't yet a sense of connection to the one one adores, right? But the moment one recognizes that the yearning is for yourself, it's not for any other, and that yearning has no object to go to, the only way to fulfill it is to accept that it's already here and celebrate that by adoring yourself, you see? But the self that is presence, not the self that had a history and wants to have a future, that's the illusion. That's the samsaric form of self. No, but the nirvanic self is always forever in mahasukha, right? So that's that yearning then, as it considers and recognizes the truth of the jnana, becomes simply that adoration itself. And then it's on fire with that love that dissolves the samsaric delusion. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. No questions? Okay, I guess we can go on if that's true. Did this teaching make sense to people? Uh-huh. Is it useful? Yeah. A little bit? Okay. Well, let's see if I should go on to the next set. Maybe I won't write the next one down because I'm getting lazy. Set two is a prescription for the mid-range students that is a description of the undescribable self as a process. Okay? So, for the first set, it's just immediate. There's no process involved. It's an effortless, immediate realization that your true nature is emptiness, and that emptiness is pure presence, and there is nothing else. There is no, you're not a body, you're not a thinking apparatus, you're just this absolute presence. In the second set, we start out with accept that your real self is pure, perfect, total, timeless presence. It is that. And now we have to enter a process to realize it. And the second one is that no further description of the state of the nirvanic self is possible except words like endless ecstasy. Okay, endless ecstasy is the state of the self. But it's also a state of deep peace. Okay? Because for some people, ecstasy would be too much. They'd say, oh, no, get me out of here. Give me a downer. I need to be grounded again. But the ecstasy also appears as such a flat-lined piece that it's not something that you would want to leave. And it appears as light, and it appears as truth, and it appears as the absolute reality, which is both void and fullness. Okay? But those terms do not really describe it. They point to it, but they are not an adequate description. However, having that description will make it, I think, more possible for you to direct yourself toward that and away from the ego. The third point to know is that the character's condition, the character's karmic events that happen, the character's past, the character's baggage of karma, the character's sense of unworthiness or unreadiness, none of that matters. The character is not an obstruction because you're not the character and you never were. So the process is simply one of disidentifying from that character. And what that really means is disidentifying from your attachment to that character. Right? There is a self-love that's called narcissism that is the opposite of love of the self. But that self-love is a love of the comforts of the body and the attachments to others and the past memories and the future orientation, all of that. None of that is an obstacle. It's not like, well, first I've got to clear my karma and first I've got to become more worthy. No, that's all part of the samsaric delusion. Okay? You do not have to engage in any self-improvement in order to be immediately liberated, because that's what the ego's natural tendency will be as a delaying action. You know, one day I'll be ready for this, but not this cycle, maybe next time around. No, it will never happen then. So don't allow yourself to believe that the condition of your ego or your body or your mental capacity or your opened or closed heartedness, none of that is a factor in any of this. It has nothing to do with how mature you are, how free of clinging or avoidance or any of the other tendencies of the ego, how angry your ego is or sad or anxious. None of it has any bearing on your capacity to be liberated in this moment. Okay, now you have to let that sink in. And it can only sink in when you recognize that you are not that character and you never were. You are playing it. This is a play. The actor is not the character. If you realize that you're acting, then at least you'll get into soul consciousness. And then you can say, well, okay, I know, I get what the script is of this character. I don't want to play that script anymore. You know, I want to talk to the playwright about having a better part. And then you'll create a relationship with your real self, and your part will magically change. Okay? And it changes more radically the less that you are interested in the ego's becoming more powerful, more beautiful, more in control, more wealthy, more whatever the ego wants to be more of or less of, it becomes irrelevant. But the real power is attained by letting go of the desire for that power at the level of the delusional entity. So, the fourth point that I think is important for the processing of someone who still believes that they are an ego or a person or a bodily being is that God, using that dualistic term, or if you prefer the Buddha mind or any other signifier of the absolute self, God has given us a free pass. Every ego has, and every soul really, has been given a free pass to get out of samsara whenever you want to. Okay? So you have the absolute right. You don't have to knock at the pearly gates and get permission from St. Peter, you know, and prove you know the password or anything else. You have a free pass, okay? But you have to want to get out of samsara, okay? And the ego, again, remember, is forbidden to want to get out. It can't get out. But the soul is holding that card and can override the ego at any moment and use its free pass. That's why God is called merciful. The next thing to understand is this. The ego's most immediate practical obstacle is fear. Right? It's fear of death. And it equates God with death. It's afraid of losing control, and it feels if it stops thinking, it's going to lose control. And if it lets go of its attachments, it's going to be abandoned, and it's going to end up lonely and abject, which is actually its state now. It's actually going to become free from that, but it creates that as a fear of its future if it does this, right? If it lets go. So one has to understand that the fear is a delusion, but to overcome that delusion, the only thing that overcomes the delusion of fear is love. If your love of God is strong enough, then your fear of God will be overcome. And your fear of life, and your fear of death, and your fear of karma, and your fear of everything that the ego fears will disappear with the energy of love, which brings joy and gives you the power to say, bring it on. Mm-hmm. Right? And it gives you an even greater power, which is the power to say to God, erase me. Right? As if the ego is a bunch of signifiers on a whiteboard, and it says, "Go ahead, erase me. I want to just be that purity of emptiness again." Okay. But it's only in a state of love that you'd be willing to be erased, and to be erased in order to know that you were the whole board with all of the potential writing on it that God will put. To replace what the ego has put there. And so that willingness to be erased as an egoic entity and all of its world erased so that reality will emerge and be fully revealed will only happen when there is love for that ultimate reality. And to know that is yourself. So this requires the faith and faithfulness that only love and the feeling of God's love for you can create. So the sixth point to ponder in this set is, I am always what I am. What you are never changes. How you appear changes. But you know in your own life, you have felt like the same person since you were able to remember that you were a person. And there has been a sense of a continuity. I am always the same, even though I've been through all kinds of events and experiences and traumas, etc. But I'm the same one. Okay, that sense of an I that is always I, regardless of its thoughts, because you may have gone through shifts in your belief systems. You may have been an atheist and then been a Christian and become a Buddhist and, become whatever. You may have gone through many different moltings and paradigm shifts along the way, but it's always been the same presence. And so to recognize that presence never changes. It's who you are now, and it will always be. And that reality of the I am-ness is also eternal and timeless and cannot be lost even in the death of the body. And that same I am-ness was there in other lifetimes with other bodies and will be in future if that is the karmic destiny. But the I am is always present as the same. And the seventh point to recognize is that realization of the self is the state of absolute and total freedom. The ego mind is not free. It's in a lot of bondages. And even though it wants to believe in its free will, it cannot will anything other than what it has willed and is willing. It's an illusion. There is no freedom in the ego. It's predetermined. But the real self is absolute freedom. And that freedom has so many implications, what freedom really is. It's not what the ego thinks freedom is. Because for the ego, it's freedom to get away with things, but you can't get away with anything. Karma will always hit. So there's no freedom at the level of the ego. It just turns into criminality, which produces more karmic backlash. But real freedom from karma, freedom from limitation, freedom from the laws of nature, freedom from life and death, freedom from all of the vicissitudes of a bodily existence, freedom to be in the wisdom and the bliss and the power of the self here and now. That freedom is your birthright. And why live enslaved to anything, especially your own mind, when you can be free? And have an infinite mind, an infinite intelligence, and an infinite non-localizable presence. So that's the basic terms to ponder to create for yourself a process of releasing yourself simply through the decision that you want to be free, you want to not have fear, you want to know your unchanging self, you want to not be at the effect of the karmic events that occur to the character that you think you're playing. The final set of seven adages for the slower students starts with this one. Recognize that the solution to all of your samsara questions is the same. Adopt a nirvanic state of mind. Mm-hmm. Okay? And because all the ego will do will create one question after another. And as soon as that question is answered, it'll say, but, how about this? And it'll create a new question, a new doubt, a new concern that will be its next obstacle to to stop it from leaving samsara. Well, all of those questions are solved only through adopting the nirvanic state of mind. And there is no other way out of an infinite set of questions and of delaying actions. So, and second, this is almost a cliche, you cannot fix what you wrongly believe is broken. And most people are living in a state of brokenness. They believe their spirit was broken because of heartbreak or some loss or trauma or whatever. I'm a broken being, you know, a burned out case, whatever, you know. There's no such thing, and it is a delusion. The self can never be broken. You are unbreakable. It's very important to recognize that so you don't have self-pity and believe you're a victim and all of that. And third, very similar, you cannot fill a non-existent lack. The ego is in a state of lack because it lacks being, because it's not in a state of presence. It's in its mind, its mental chatter in past and future. It's not present, right? And that creates a sense of lack. But it's not real lack. It's the illusion of lack because you're not paying attention to the fullness that will be revealed as soon as you're fully present. The fullness of being, the fullness of power comes only in presence. It can't come through a thinking process or a getting process, because the ego wants to grasp, it wants to get something and hold on to it for security. No, it's only letting go that will achieve that. So the fourth thing, again, this is kind of repetitive, but it's, I think, an important point to really chew on. The past is unreal. It only exists as memory traces. You can't prove that you're not a replicant, you know, like in that famous film. What was the name of that film? Yeah, so you may have memories that aren't even real. Most people's memories are actually not real. That's been proven in many psychological tests. And I'm sure you've been in situations with someone else who you think had the same experience you did, and you both remember it totally differently because it's all a projection. And so there really is no past and obviously no future. There is only presence. So the more you understand that, the more you realize, well, I'm missing out on reality and I'm suffering over something that doesn't exist and never did. It's totally unreal. Why am I suffering over the past or over a future that I imagine I won't have or that I'm going to miss out on something or whatever? So all suffering is futile as well, and it doesn't. It will never get you what you want. And not only is the past unreal, but the other people you remember from the past are not real, and those in the future, and you yourself are unreal, because all you are is an internalization of the projections that you receive. So all of these mutually reinforcing, codependent unrealities create a web of thoughts that produce delusion. None of it is real. And in a state of presence, all of it falls away. So, you have to recognize the value of presence, that and the value is infinite versus the negative value of the unreal past and future. So, and the next thing to understand is when the bombs start falling, the only bunker that is safe is nirvana. Okay? It is the bunker. It's not an underground city. It's a supernatural, transcendental realm, because it is that, but it's a realm that's a state of mind. And you want to be in nirvana, not in samsara, when the trouble comes and when the collective negredo hits the fan and starts blowing in your direction. You want to be in nirvana, not in samsara. So it's wise to know your way there, and your way there is most direct through pure adoration without an object and without a subject. That adoration is the entrance to nirvana. So, and the sixth one is that you need to know it is enough just to recognize and accept the unreality of the character you've been playing and of its world, and to know that the real is not this. It's not this, like neti neti. It is nothing you can point to. All that is real can only be the consciousness itself that is aware of the unreality. Okay? You are aware of samsara from nirvana. At this very moment, you're actually in nirvana, peering into samsara, which is your own dream fantasy field, and believing you're in it. But you're actually not in it. You're in another dimension looking at it, because it is entertaining, just in the same way you'll turn on the computer and look at some internet site that entertains you, and you'll suddenly be in it. But you are in and never leave nirvana. So you're free already. It's enough just to know that and abide in that knowledge. And then seven, only the real is. Only the real is. So it doesn't even matter if you gain nirvana, if you take the pass and enter the bunker and all of that, because even that is part of the delusion of samsara. Okay? Whether or not you get liberated is part of the delusion, because only the real self is, right? So does any of it really matter? Well, it doesn't matter, except that the quality of your experience will shift from one of suffering to one of bliss. That's all. If that matters to you, then, you know, you will realize that you're in nirvana and be done with it. Nothing could be easier. I hope that I've made a convincing case for that. But if not, that's part of the delusion as well. So it's all a game and a play, and everything will come out perfectly. No one is really suffering. So it's important to know that. And not to think you have to rescue anyone, or to be rescued, or to get revenge on all the villains and bring justice and righteousness to the world again. it's in God's hands. Everything will turn out exactly perfectly, but there's nothing you as an ego can do that is other than whatever the script has ordained. But you are already able to be free of that script and of all of the suffering that the character has to pretend it is going through, just by that realization that you were never shipwrecked in samsara to start with. Okay, I'm done now. Is there any questions after all of these? I hope that they gave you ammunition for destroying Maya, not that Maya, but the Maya of illusion, of the game of enjoying illusion rather than enjoying reality. Okay, so try nirvana and then compare the two, and you won't want to come back to samsara. I guarantee it. No one ever has. It gets 5-star reviews in the Google Nirvana section. Not that you can believe the reviews, but that's part of the delusion. But nonetheless, it is what. There's a delusional shawl action. Are there any questions? There's one. Go ahead.
Thank you, Shinya. My question goes back to number 3. It is forbidden to leave samsara. And as it relates to there's a free pass and an absolute right, can you speak more? What is the forbiddenness made of? What's the mechanism that's...
It's a command that you fulfill the desire of the other, for one thing, and so you can't abandon anyone else. You have to be loyal to those attachment figures, even if it's a dog or a cat or, you know, some non-human thing. But I can't be free and be in the present because I worry about, you know, the health of this being. You know, there's a paranoia that's inherent to the ego about everything, and a feeling of worry and concern, and the need to take care of the other, because that was put into the ego at birth. That it, in order to ensure the mother's love, I've got to be there for her and be indispensable and be the people pleaser and all of that, or I've got to rebel but always stay in relationship to the other but cause trouble and mutiny and all of that, but I'm dependent on that situation in order to have my identity. I need the other to work against in order to feel some kind of individuality. So there is always that... that need to believe that you were sent here for a reason and you have to fulfill that thing. You have to find your purpose in life, when actually the only purpose is to be present. There is no other point to it. And so the more that you are given, however, ego ideals in childhood, to make a lot of money, to become successful in this or that, make your parents proud, and, you know, make your religion proud of you, make whatever. But you're working for the other. You're not independent, and you're not sovereign. And you're brought up within a field of language in which that otherness and that polarization that creates samsara is inherent to the thinking process, and you are taught that you have to keep thinking and think faster than the other and ahead of the other and in different ways in order to try to stay ahead of the game. But that is being part of the game. So it's inherent to the need to become something in the world, which is why you hear the Sufis saying things like, realize you're nobody, son of nobody. But who does that, right? In the ego level, that's forbidden, right? You have to honor your father and mother, and you have to do this and that, and right? So not that I'm saying you shouldn't as a character, but realize that's not who you are and be free of those bonds of dependency. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Thank you. I found it very impacting. I found all three somewhat similar. I think I found it more impacting than I have been having a question, but I've been sitting with it. Your point about the effortless effort and it being really about opening the heart. Mm-hmm. And at some moment you realize your heart has already been open, but you just haven't been in it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like, what? So there's that, huh?
Isn't it true?
I suppose.
You don't know?
I mean, it feels from one perspective like, no, my heart hasn't been open, that there is an effort to feel like I am opening my heart in love and feeling loved. Or,
but aren't there some moments when you're in your heart and you knew all along it was open? And you had to protect it because it was open. You had to defend against it and pretend it was closed. But it can't close. It's impossible to close the heart. The heart is infinite. But you can narrow your mind so that you don't have contact with your heart. And if you stay in your head...
In the filing.
Yeah. You stay in the head and in the file cabinet and you're not in your heart.
Okay, so then there's in that state... allowing the self-arising wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's always there.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That I retract again.
It feels too vulnerable, right?
So maybe what is it to stay put and cultivate this?
Well, what happens if you stay in your heart is the energy increases. It augments to such a point that the ego becomes terrified. Because the energy saturates your consciousness to such an extent that the ego begins to feel it's evaporating. It's dissolving, you know, and it gets terrified and it wants to hold on to its existence. And so it comes out of the heart again and says, that was close, right? So now that's the real issue. Is the ego will not give up its illusory existence. It wants you in samsara.
Okay. So
that's its job.
But then the self-arising wisdom, does it have questions about its self-arising wisdom? Or is this the point where... There are no questions then about the...
Yeah, and the self-arising wisdom happens in the nirvanic state of mind, not in the samsaric. There you just get self-arising delusions.
I got that part. All right, well, then, bueno, I don't know.
Okay, well, thank you. These are good questions. Anyone else before we... here's one. Why are?
Thank you, Shunya. I was a bit surprised to hear you say that it's enough to know. Mm-hmm. Like it's enough to know that ultimately we are complete freedom, but there's a character that's still playing out that illusion at the level of the ego, because it feels a little bit like that's just soothing to the superego or whatever it is that's still trying to make an effort, but it's not actually ultimately true.
It's true. I agree with you on one level, but if you actually accept that superego is also unreal, right? Even if you give in to it, there's a recognition that it was a choice to do that, right? And so what it does is it begins to create an awareness that you're in nirvana, peering into samsara. You're not ready to stop peering into it. You're more interested in that than in who you are in the nirvanic state. But a shift has already subtly been made that will gradually bear fruit. It's like you planted a seed in nirvana, and the more you recognize the unreality of this, at some point the unreal samsara will be so disgusting, dangerous, horrific, that you will say, okay, now I want to activate that knowledge of the unreality, and presto, you'll be out of it. But at least you have the bridge has been built.
So you would say it's enough at the level of like a soul level of recognition. I guess I'm looking at it from the perspective of what would be the qualities of a liberated consciousness. That'd be like different creative capacities, and like talking about the level of like Jivan Mukti versus it's enough just to know the difference. Like they seem like two different levels.
Yes and no, because when you really get it that, okay, I'm not the ego in its world, what am I? I'm just a negation. I'm nothing, right? And so you will actually enter that nothing. This is the same as Atmavichara, asking, who am I? Well, there's no answer to it, because there really is no I. There's just awareness without any qualities. So in the same way, there will be that recognition that there is emptiness. And by entering into that emptiness, then its fullness is revealed. All you need to know is at any moment I can step out of the illusion and I'm in the emptiness. And that will actually give a kind of a calmness and more presence to the consciousness that will be able to have glimpses of that freedom even while it's still going through the script and the obsession with the delusion. There'll be an awareness that this obsessive character is not who I am, and at a certain moment the cord will be cut.
So would you say even ideas like forgetting and remembering and those kinds of concepts, yeah. I guess, yeah. That's also something that's just observed. They're not actually true.
That's right. It's all part of the delusion. There is no forgetting or remembering except in the illusion of the character, right? The self never forgets itself and never needs to remember. So, no, all of that is part of the illusion. That's why it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you meditate. It doesn't matter, you know, what you eat. It doesn't matter. None of it matters because it's part of an illusion, okay? It only matters within the terms of that illusion. You know, oh my God, I gained weight from eating this, you know, or I, you know, did this or that I shouldn't have done and said this or that, oh, what'll be, you know. None of that matters. Once you understand that it's all a dream field, then there's freedom from being entailed and captured by guilt and shame and fear and all of that. And so 99% of your suffering can be released already just by that knowledge.
Haji, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How many thought it was useful tonight? Yeah? Okay, that's good. I'll accept that. And remember, all of this is simply part of the delusion anyway. You're already liberated. So don't pay attention to any of this. And just be present. Namaste.